see is it's hot outside because we can see that for ourselves. But we're going to see if we can produce another hot show for you here tonight, folks. That's right. It's drive time. It's prime time. It's time for the American Adversaries to be live on FM 105.5 and AM 660. And indeed, that's what we are. We're here. We're live. We're ready to go. And of course, you can be a part of the show too. We invite you to call us at 407-774-8255. Nick LoCicero is on the bridge tonight. Jeff Sinis is spending tonight and tomorrow with his family because it's his mother's birthday. So I want to wish him and his mother a happy time. And once again, he's a great man. He's been producing this show for 6 years now. Of course, Nick does a great job too. And he's welcoming your phone calls, as I said, at 407-774-8255. We got Abe Katzman going to be back with us tonight. He's back in Jerusalem. We also have John Barrows, who's going to stop by a little bit later on in the show. And Jason Hoyt is going to try to stop by for a few minutes, too, and tell us how his efforts in opposition to Amendment 4, the Stop Playing Favorites pact that he has started, he can give us an update on how that's going. Real quick, you know, most of what everybody is talking about on their shows today, we talked about on our show last night. But we also, part of that was the situation where Barack Obama is coming back to Washington, D.C., and tomorrow he was scheduled to go to Louisiana, Baton Rouge, and visit the flood zone down there. And last Friday, we were talking about this, and I was having a mental block, and I could not think of the name of the governor of Louisiana. I could come up with Ray Nagin, of course, the mayor of New Orleans during Katrina, but I could not think of who the governor was back then who stonewalled George Bush and made him look like a fool. Now, it ended up costing her her job, and Bobby Jindal became the governor of Louisiana for 8 years until Bel Edwards took over and got some information that it was Mary Landrieu. Well, that just didn't sit right with me. Mary Landrieu at that time was the senator, one of the senators, I should say, from Louisiana. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe she lost her job, too. I don't know. I'll have to double check on that. So we did some checking around, and sure enough, the governor of Louisiana during the Katrina storm and disaster in New Orleans was Kathleen Blanco or Blanco. I remember saying Blanco blanked out. You spell it B-L-A-N-C-O. Kathleen Blanco was the governor. And if I'm not mistaken, she was the daughter of a former governor or high-ranking official there in Louisiana. A lot of nepotism goes on in politics, and that was an example of it. But it was Kathleen Blanco. So thanks to Nick LoCicero for digging that up for me. I appreciate that. And we just want to be accurate on the show here. All right. So it was Kathleen Blanco who stonewalled George W. Bush. To get back to the current affair, of course, Barack Obama has been taking a little bit of flack for not dropping everything and leaving his vacation and going down to Louisiana. I think that if you are the leader of the people, you go when and where they need you at that time and that place. And, you know, yeah, it would have been on our dime, but I do think he should have got on Air Force One and hauled himself down there. And the governor yesterday, and we talked about this once again a little bit last night on the show, Bel Edwards, he said, he corrected CNN. CNN was trying to make it sound like Donald Trump going there on Friday was a bad thing. He was just down there showboating and trying to get a photo op, and he got in the way of the recovery efforts and this sort of thing. Well, the governor corrected CNN and said, no, you mischaracterized what I said. He said, what I said was, we didn't tell him to come or not come. He came down. As a matter of fact, he was very helpful. It has brought a lot more attention to the situation now, which was lacking, and we appreciate him having come. And, of course, about that time, they said, okay, thank you, Governor. We'll be talking to you later. But the bottom line is, because the president, the so-called optics looked so bad, him playing golf and relaxing and having a grand old time, while these people down in Baton Rouge were suffering and getting flooded out of their homes, some 60 or 80,000 homes now destroyed, over 100,000 people displaced. And, of course, all the criticism that he laid at George W. Bush's feet during Katrina, as Kathleen Blanco was stonewalling him, that it doesn't look good, so the media just didn't cover the story. And because the media didn't cover the story, the relief efforts didn't pour in like they normally pour in. I mean, Americans, generally speaking, rise to the occasion of helping fellow, well, I was going to say fellow Americans, but people all over the world, when disaster strikes, Americans are the ones who step up the tallest and the biggest. But they can't step up if they don't know that they are needed. And in this situation here, because the media was not covering it, because Barack Obama was not going to it or paying any attention to it, at least not noticeably so, it didn't get covered. And so the people didn't get the help that they would normally get. That's the bad news. The good news is they fared pretty well, at least initially, for themselves. However, at least 13 people did die. And, of course, if this were the same situation as Katrina, those 13 lives would be blamed on Barack Obama, just like all the lives who died in New Orleans were blamed on George W. Bush. I mean, the Democrats went so far as one of the Kennedy kin came out saying that George W. Bush had a machine and was able to guide the path of a hurricane. I mean, if you want to talk about the 100% grade A unadulterated doofusry, right there it is. But that's what was being passed off as reality. He blew up the levees to kill black people. Remember the stories? Oh, yeah, they found a big hole, so he must have blown up the levee. Of course, they didn't realize hydrodynamics, and when water overflows a levee, how it then creates a big hole on the other side as it's cascading down and eroding it away, which causes the levee to collapse. Duh. Well, we can't get down to facts, can we, when we're blaming Republicans like George W. Bush or, say, Donald J. Trump? Well, of course, it backfired. The governor had his say that the optics are now what they are, and Barack Obama is just now getting off his vacation and is going to lollygag on over there tomorrow, I guess. So, anyway, like I said, we were a day ahead. We were talking about that last night. By the way, we also reported, as came out in the news today, very, very sporadically and briefly, Donald Trump gave $100,000 to a church that Tony Perkins goes to, is a pastor at, and he also delivered a truckload of goods down there. All right. Now, on the other side of the campaign, you have more problems for Hillary Clinton. It seems as though the FBI has come up with 14,900 more emails that Judicial Watch is getting their hands on. This is being reported heavily on Fox this afternoon, this evening. We shall see what comes of these. Jason Chaffetz this morning on MSNBC reported that he had seen a number of these new documents, and that what he had seen was, and he kind of laughed or giggled when he chuckled, however you want to say it, he said these are more embarrassing than anything else. I guess maybe they're about yoga and wedding plans. We'll find out. Judicial Watch is promising to produce those. As we reported last night, federal judge appointed by Bill Clinton has ordered Hillary Clinton to reply under oath, but by written replies to questions posed by Judicial Watch. Colin Powell has created possibly some very serious problems for Hillary Clinton, which and this kind of, if you will, makes one wonder about the FBI investigation and only interrogating or questioning, I should say, interviewing Hillary Clinton for 3 hours on a Saturday morning and then evidently not following up on her answers, because Colin Powell has told People magazine that Hillary's, and I quote him now, people have been trying to pin this on me. And what he's talking about, and of course when he said Hillary's people, he evidently is being polite to Hillary, because Hillary Clinton has said the same thing in public and evidently to the FBI. In other words, that Colin Powell is the one who told her about setting up the private server and using a private server. And by the way, Colin Powell used an AOL address. He used the AOL servers. And he said he told her no such thing. So evidently, the FBI didn't question him as to the veracity of Hillary's statements to them in order to determine that she had actually committed the Martha Stewart and the Scooter Libby sin. And that is that whether or not they broke the law originally, they lied to the FBI, and that is a federal crime punishable by a term to be determined by a judge and federal guidelines provided by the Bureau of Prisons, the Federal Bureau of Prisons. That's why Martha Stewart went to prison, if you remember. She lied to the FBI. It wasn't so much about the insider trading as that she lied about it. Well, according now to Colin Powell, Hillary lied to the FBI that he did not tell her to set up a private server. In fact, he didn't even speak to her about it until she had been doing it for over a year. So, will the FBI now question Colin Powell and get his statements and then perhaps present some brand new evidence to the Justice Department? I wouldn't hold my breath on that. Let's take a phone call, and then we got Abe Katzman warming up in the bullpen. Eva, thank you for calling tonight. How you doing?
Real good. I just wanted to say on that Judicial Watch thing, it's really not going to be as big as they're trying to make it. According to what I heard on another show this morning, lawyers will be with her, and they will fill it out. She does have to sign the affidavits or whatever it's called after she answers all the questions. But here's the thing about it. They're not going to have no rebuttal questions. They can't answer nothing. Just what's on that questionnaire.
Oh, yeah. Well, not that she would need, you know, help saying, I don't remember, I don't recall, and coming up with a bunch of legalese of her own.
Supposedly,
right.
She used to have her lawyers fill it out for her.
No, you're never going to get anything out of Hillary Clinton unless you can catch her in something, perhaps with this thing with Colin Powell. But if the FBI doesn't follow up on it, it doesn't mean anything.
No, but hopefully they'll get her, but with this Justice Department, I don't think so. I'm like you, I wouldn't hold my breath.
No, and as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, the Judicial Watch has several weeks to present her with the questions, and then she has like 30 days to respond. So
yeah,
it may not
so
even.
That's when they're sexing it back.
Yeah, so.
Supposedly the day after or 2 or 3 days after the election.
Right, exactly. But nonetheless, they have dug up another almost 15,000 emails, which might provide some good campaign fodder.
And at That's true.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I'd rather beat her at the polls anyway.
Exactly. I just pray the Lord will swamp. But I want to.
Let a new Justice Department look at
yes,
it.
Yes, but what this election is really about is not Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives. Is about the New World Order, and these people like you that have a megaphone, you need to educate the public.
Oh, we do.
Public people, most of them don't know what you're talking about when you say New World Order.
Well, we were talking about it last night, as a matter of fact, on the show. So, we cover those things. And
well, I heard something today that this bank bailout, that's all the big banks and BRAC with England, over in England, what they're doing, instead of these companies being Americans like they used to be, they're internationalists, and they trade bonds with the bank, and they make their money in the heck with us.
It's the way it's always been.
Yep.
They just can come up with new contrived ways about doing it.
Exactly. And I also heard, you know, we don't have any manufacturing anymore. In the next year or so, they're supposed to go for the service industries.
Well, they already are. All right. Yep. Okay, thanks, Eva.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate it. All right. By the way, in case you hadn't heard, breaking news broke this morning. Ryan Lochte has lost his endorsement by Speedo. What you probably have not heard, though, is that it has been revealed that ex-football player Michael McBath is being considered to replace him as the model for Speedo. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got Abe Katzman on the line, so please stay with us. All right, we're back with the American Adversaries. We now have Abe Katzman coming to us live from Jerusalem. Abe, once again, good to talk to you. How you doing this evening?
Hey, doing great. Good to be with you after missing you for a week.
Yeah, it's always great to have you on the show. I start jonesing after about 8 days. I got to have my fix of Abe. Hey, listen, I'm sorry about the bad news. It seems as though McBath has beat you out for taking that gig that Ryan Lochte just had to give up modeling for Speedo.
Yeah, it must have been those last couple of bags of chips I had. Did me in.
I guess it was. All right, let's get to some more serious stuff. Let's start with the presidential election over here. What's your impressions, and what are impressions you're getting from people over there about it?
Well, it's interesting. On the one hand, maybe we were finally witnessing the long-expected pivot. The famous pivot that everybody was waiting for, claiming it wasn't going to be able to happen. Well, I don't know if he can keep it up for too long, but Trump seems to have contained himself, I guess, at least for a few days. We'll see what he can do. And it is over here. It's actually I'm kind of amazed by how much of an effect it's having it's anecdotal evidence. I haven't seen any polls. But I get the sense that people would very much like to be able to vote for him. And they just keep on getting turned off by what they think is irresponsible, kind of nutty behavior. Instability is not something that people in the Middle East look for in an American president.
Right.
So I think that a few days of balanced and serious speaking and showing the capability, showing that, you know, when he wants to be, he can be a serious guy, that goes a long, long way. And I think we're in Israel, maybe more than in other places, I think there's a positive reaction to it right away.
Well, you know, I speculated on the show last night after seeing and sort of hearing the same thing that you just said over here, and that is that if I think that that this is Trump's election to let me put it this way. The way I put it last night was this election is about Trump. We all know Hillary Clinton. We got the lowdown on her, and people basically do not want to vote for her. So if Trump can keep up what he's doing and give people a certain amount of comfort with voting for him, I think he can take this election.
I think that's true, and I think that the more attention that is paid to her, the better it is for him.
That too,
so,
yeah.
Which I think is part of her strategy also. I mean, what kind of presidential candidate goes an entire election year without holding a press conference? Well, somebody named Hillary Clinton. She's gone, what is it now, close to 9 months, I think, without a press conference? I don't know if she can keep this up all the way, but, you know, I mean, especially when things start happening like this, you know, the judge ordering the release of 14,000 more emails. Entirely personal, of course. It's all going to be yoga routines and Chelsea's wedding invitation list.
Can't wait to read it myself.
Even though some of them, Comey said that there were classified documents in there, classified at the time they were sent.
Yeah.
So the judge is now, I think I saw that they're going to be released in phases beginning October 14th. I don't know who's in charge of deciding what gets released. I'm sure the State Department is gonna stonewall as much as they can.
Yep.
I don't even know who's got the documents. I guess the whole thing that's slowing it down is their review of the documents and maybe needing to redact it. But this, I mean, October 14th, 3 weeks before the election, I don't know what percentage of these documents will come out before then, but at a minimum, it's going to be pretty obvious that these were not, what was her term? Something about any document that could possibly have been business related.
Right.
She released.
Right.
And, you know, like everything else, it's just going to be such a transparent lie. And it just, you know, she doesn't look good as a candidate. And so you're right. It comes back to Trump.
Yep. All right. Well, this comes up to a break here, but stay with me, Abe. And we'll be back right after this short break with more of the American Adversaries.
Oh, it's me. It's me. It's DDP.
Yo, it's me. DDP. Diamond Dallas Page. The king of Bada Bing. The master of the diamond cutter. A three-time world champion. And you're listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
Bye. All right, and we're back. Welcome back to the show, folks. Christopher Hart here. Got Nicholas Cicero on the bridge. Abe Katzman on the line. You can be a part of the show, too. 407-774-8255. As the American Adversaries Drive Time primetime show continues. Abe, let's go to the other side of the world and talk about some business over there. I understand that there was a rocket attack. What, from the Gaza Strip into Israel?
Yeah, there was, for, you know, no obvious reason. It's just that that's what Hamas does every so often. What really made it news is that Israel hit back they hit about 50 targets. They had a number of sorties over Gaza, and they hit about 50 different targets, and people, even though it hasn't been explicitly stated, there is, this may be kind of a new doctrine. The new defense minister, Avigdor Lieberman, I think we discussed him once before as
yep.
being sort of a Trump-esque kind of character in some ways, but he's never been in favor of proportionate response. And he's always wanted to hit back harder. And now it looks like advocating disproportionate response might be Israel's new policy here. They're being quiet about it. They just kind of did it. But if it may make Hamas think twice before they launch, they have the calculation in mind. If they launch a rocket, they have a target taken out. But they make that calculation, and sometimes they think it's worthwhile. If they have 50 targets taken out, maybe they'll think twice. Maybe they won't do anything like that.
I know it, and it's what's extraordinary is that this is extraordinary. You know what I'm saying? I know.
It's but it, look, if it works, that is going to. That can change things. In fact, Hamas came out with a statement. I think they were a little surprised by this because they came out and said criticizing Israel, saying that the escalation shows that Israel is trying to change the status quo in the area. It's like, well, who launched the rocket?
Right.
Now, part of this also is related to elections that are going to be taking place, I think, in a couple of months in the West Bank. And Hamas is going to be participating in these elections. Hamas is believed to be a good deal more popular than most of the Palestinian Authority. And if they do well in these elections, Well, not sure exactly what that's going to mean for Mahmoud Abbas and his people. But one of the things that happens as these elections approach is that each side tries to impress the public by showing how tough they are against Israel. And that's probably why they started launching rockets for, you know, otherwise no apparent reason, so that they can say, see, we still launch rockets against Israel. Palestinian Authority hasn't been doing anything. So they win votes by doing that. What worries me is that then the Palestinian Authority has to show the public how tough they can be against Israel. So don't be shocked if there is, you know, if you start to see additional terror attacks. We won't even, if they're stopped, we won't even know about most of them. But there may be attempts. There may be an increase in attempts.
Abe, in relation to these terrorist attacks, I saw an article, actually it was on the opinion page of the Wall Street Journal, but it talked about how prosecutors, I'm reading from it now, prosecutors in the city of Beersheba allege that Mohammed El Halabi, Gaza Strip director of the California-based charity World Vision, transferred tens of millions of dollars to Hamas to buy weapons and build underground attack tunnels. I think we've talked about this sort of thing before, where these NGOs are actually funneling money, whether they are, you know, admitting they're aware of it or not, to terrorist organizations that are being used to commit terrorist acts.
Yeah, this is, you know, this was a little bit surprising, I think, because of who it was. This is the World Vision charity, which is a big Christian charity. And I think their budget is, I think it's well over 100, maybe even over $200 million a year. Anyway, they diverted apparently $60 million to Hamas and to Hamas's official military wing. And there's nothing, it's not even like, you know, Hamas can claim, oh, well, we also do social services. And then, you know, money being fungible, the social services division decides to move its other money to the military wing. This was just given to the military wing. And in addition to that, apparently there were also piles of cash, somewhere in the area of $15 million of cash. All of this money, in theory, had been earmarked for civilian projects. And it's interesting, just I think it was yesterday I saw a report that says now, here we are 2 years after the war in Gaza from a couple of years ago, and even though there was all this money donated and billions of dollars committed to rebuild Gaza, there have been essentially no new homes built. Or rebuilt during this time. So it means it's all gone to the military. It's all gone to building terror tunnels and building up terror infrastructure. You know, it's this shell game that Hamas plays all the time. They, you know, here they act as the victim. They get donations ostensibly for humanitarian reasons, and then they take the money and step up their military activities.
Wow.
I'm glad it was caught. I'm glad that World Vision has a little bit of egg on its face for this. And I hope that Israel exposes this kind of activity, which is really very widespread, as you said, among the NGOs.
But it, according to this article, this opinion piece by David Feith, he talks about how the Palestinian Authority rewards terrorism by paying families, and they have a scale. And if a mother and father with children commit a terrorist act, die in the act, and kill a lot of people, they get the highest payout. And this was supposedly against the law, but now it is basically being brazenly done. In the vein of sort of this new approach with these rocket attacks, might it also be a good approach to say, we're going to cut off the money when you're going to be using it to pay for terrorist acts? Abe?
Yeah, well, they should. This has been a story for a while that they give stipends to the families of bombers, of suicide bombers and terrorists, and it really is a good incentive. I mean, especially if you are, if you're leading a life that's going nowhere, and you're depressed, and you're part of a religion that not only gives you this fantastic afterlife. But at the same time, your family is provided for, you become a hero. This is a real incentive for people to do this. And the fact that your family is provided for forever, is really a big thing. Now, the European Union, actually had gotten wind of this and actually threatened to stop making the payments to the Palestinian Authority unless the Palestinian Authority would stop making these payments to the terrorist families. So what the Palestinian Authority did is they said, okay, we won't do it anymore. Instead, they gave sort of a block grant to the Palestinian Liberation Organization,
right,
their kind of sister organization, and the PLO gives the money. So the Palestinian Authority can say, "Well, we're not giving any money to any terrorists."
Right.
So they've still been playing games with this, and I mean, it really is appalling that this goes on, and it goes on with the I wouldn't say that they're complicit, but they're, you know, the awareness that this is happening by much of the Western world,
and
just unbelievable.
Yeah, indeed it is. Well, speaking of lots of money changing hands, let's talk about the money that changed hands to the Iranians. I remember when we first talked about this, when you were on with us on the show back in January, when the prisoners were released, minus Robert Levinson, that we said, you know, this is ransom, and now it even looks more like it, and yet the administration calls it leverage. Were people in Israel able to contain their laughter when they heard that?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't just call it, I don't know, workplace violence or something like that. That's
right.
I mean, you know, the way that they play games with the language. In fact, the way they described it, it's almost as if America was holding the money hostage, and we were able to use it as leverage to get our people back. Very clever. Very clever. Got to hand it to the Obama administration.
Yeah, I guess. I suppose so.
I don't know. Does anybody buy this? Does anyone outside of the Democratic Party buy this? Is Putin impressed by this? You know, the world looks at this and just cannot believe that this is what's become of the United States of America.
Speaking of the world and Russia, Putin, what do you think was going on? Originally, a few days ago, last week, they started flying missions out of Iran to bomb in Syria, and I saw a report today where they said that they're going to stop that. What do you think happened? What happened there? Do you know?
Well, none of it's good news from our standpoint. That I'm pretty sure of.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you see increased Russian involvement, having the Russians based there also makes it that much tougher to do anything about the nuclear facilities.
Right.
Between that and the different anti-aircraft missiles that they probably have brought in to defend these their air fleets. So in terms of the in again, out again thing, I'm sure they can reverse it if they want and go back in. The story is that Iran was kind of angry that Russia boasted about this. Apparently, this was agreed to, but they were supposed to keep it secret. I'm not sure I buy that because I really wonder how secret something like that can be. If you've got heavy bombers taking off from somewhere, I'm sure America knows what's going on. I'm sure Israel knows what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, you've got satellites that pick all this stuff up. You can't hide something like that. So, but again, you know, piece this together with all kinds of other things dealing with the Russian involvement with Iran, whether it's with arms sales, whether it's with possibly providing information from Hillary Clinton's emails about the identity of the nuclear scientist that Iran first considered a hero and then suddenly decided to put to death.
Right.
There's certainly a disturbingly close relationship there. Putin and Russia will do absolutely whatever is good for Putin and Russia. There is no moral calculation that comes into play for them. This is strictly what is good for them.
Yeah. This situation in Turkey, over the weekend, there was this bomb, suicide bomber at a wedding. Turns out the suicide bomber was, I think, a 14-year-old kid. The media over here is trying to make something big of that. That's nothing new to people in Israel, though, is it?
No, it's unfortunate that you do have this happen sometimes. There are some very young kids that are involved in terror activities. I mean, I suppose they're that much easier to brainwash, that much easier to recruit than some of the older kids. I don't know, but yeah, it seems to be that there was. When I just saw something on the news, I think that they found a 12-year-old kid.
Another one.
In Iraq. Yeah, and they were able to get him to take the suicide belt off before anything happened. But I think he was 12.
Wow.
So this kind of stuff happens. It's also not new. If you remember during the Iran-Iraq war, I think Iran was sending 12-year-olds into the minefields to clear the mines. If you blow up enough kids, that you make a track that they're able to pass through. These are societies that are perfectly willing to, they look at people as assets, as property, and they will use the people as they see fit. It flies in the face of our American values, but our Judeo-Christian values, but this is what's done in this part of the world. We should be shocked, but we shouldn't be so surprised.
Yeah, we should be, and we should be vigilant and resistant to it ourselves as well. One last thing before I let you go tonight. I saw an article in the paper over here, local paper, about the quote-unquote women of the wall. And it's one of these articles where you get to the last paragraph, and the last paragraph basically is of the nature that this isn't a big deal after all. But the nature of the article was that the women of the wall are roiling Israel because women aren't supposed to pray at the Western Wall. But evidently they have had some sort of services there since 1988. Can you sort this out for us?
Yeah, I think so. I'll try to do it without getting too deep into the weeds.
Okay.
The Western Wall, which is the wall of the retaining wall for the Temple Mount, for a long time was considered the holiest place in Judaism because it was the closest. It's actually the Temple Mount that's the holiest place, but because Jews didn't have access to it, so it became the Western Wall.
Right.
There is actually a prayer space for men and a prayer space for women. There was always sort of a consensus that religious sensibilities, orthodox, traditional religious sensibilities, should be maintained there. And they had been. But what Women of the Wall have done is on the one hand, they have a point. On another hand, they are agitators. They claim that there is no reason that they should not be able to pray in a non-orthodox manner as men do. So, for example, it is traditional that only the reading of the Torah that we do during services is done by men. So they are even though there's really nothing that absolutely says it cannot be done by women, so it's not traditionally done that way. So they are pushing they will have a reading of the Torah at the wall, and it gets tons of publicity, and it makes people, especially the ultra-Orthodox in the area, irate. And I think that might be kind of why they do it. In fact, now they're going to be starting, they're going to be practicing for blowing the shofar. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. Is that the ram's
the horn? The horn, yes.
Blow, the horn that we blow on Rosh Hashanah, on the first of the year.
Right.
So, of course, they're picking, you know, they're picking customs
right.
that are visible or noisy, that get a lot of publicity. And I would take them more seriously if these were people who, even when they weren't doing these monthly services, if these were people who were hanging out at religious services and at the wall and praying all the time anyway. But the fact that they come in just once a month, just to do things their way, to make a point, that kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's tough. I think from a legal standpoint, they're on pretty solid ground. But from a tradition standpoint and kind of a decency standpoint, I gotta question them.
Yeah, I think they, along with Black Lives Matter, probably graduated from the Barack Obama School of Community Organizing. All right, Abe, thanks okay. for sorting that out for us, as usual. It's been fascinating to talk to you tonight. We appreciate you. Please stay safe, and we'll be praying for you.
Thanks. Always a pleasure being with you guys.
All right. We'll look forward to next week. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is Abe Katzman. You spell Katzman with an S. You can find him at abekatzman.com. He's an excellent columnist. And, of course, we link up to him on our website, americanadversaries.com. All right. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the show. Welcome back to the show. Boy, I love that music. Big music, big show. We're back. We're live. 407-774-8255 is the number. Jason Hoyt has joined me again in the studio today. Once again, Jason, good to see you.
Great to see you as well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason has started the political action committee entitled Stop Playing Favorites. You can find them at stopplayingfavorites.com, and it's all about Amendment 4. Once again, real quick, give us an update on what is Amendment 4 and why are you in opposition to it?
Sure. Amendment 4 is going to be on our ballot here this month. Actually, early voting is already going on. This month, the August 30 Florida primary is Amendment 4.
Week from tomorrow.
Yes, sir. So there's been a lot of confusion about these quote-unquote solar amendments. And when I started doing research last month, a lot of people call. They always say, hey, what's going to be on our ballot? Tell me about these judges. Tell me about these school board people.
Same phone calls.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I started, yeah. And then they say, tell me about these. Wait a minute, there's an amendment? You know. So I did some research, and there's a lot of confusion out there. Amendment 1, which was citizen-led, which was by a petition drive, which is the voice of the people, will be on the November ballot.
Right. That
amendment,
is that is a solar amendment,
yes.
As well.
Yeah. Okay. And Amendment 4, a solar amendment, is on our August primary ballot. That was not done by the people directly, you know, but through petition drive. It was done by our legislature. Second to the last day of session, March 9th, I believe, voted unanimously by all Republicans, all Democrats, Florida House, and the Senate. And what I did was I started to do a deep dive. First thing you do is you have to read the title of it, Solar Devices or Renewable Energy Source Devices, Exemption from Certain Taxation and Assessments. The ballot summary, the first sentence says, proposing an amendment. Who proposed it? The legislature. The legislature says, proposing an amendment to the state constitution to authorize the legislature by general law. So what they're doing is proposing an amendment to the constitution to give themselves the power to exempt who they want.
Right. It is a power grab, is what this the bottom line is this is a power grab by the legislature so that they can play favorites.
Yes.
All right, and that's why he's saying stop playing favorites.
Absolutely.
And so Amendment 4 is not really to benefit the public. It's to benefit the power players. That's the bottom line here.
Well, when you dig in, it says to exempt from ad valorem taxation the assessed value of solar, blah, 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 devices subject to tangible personal property tax. Now, when I travel the state, I get a lot of feedback, and we'll probably talk about that in a little bit. But a lot of people are like, hey, it's Florida. Sunshine, solar. Of course we need solar here. They want to vote yes. But I'm like, guys, there's more to it than that.
Right.
And we'll talk about that. But
yeah, this is once again, there's more here than meets the eye. They're holding a carrot out. and they're not telling you about the poison that goes along with it. That's why we're here, to give you the other side of the picture here. So please stay with us, because we have to take a break, but we'll be back on the other side of the break with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show live on FM 105.5 and AM 660 The Answer. For hour two of the American Adversaries Drive Time Now Prime Time Show, as we come to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660 The Answer. 407-774-8255 is still the phone number if you want to call with any questions or comments. We'd love to hear from you. And by we, I mean, of course, Nick LoCicero, who is on the bridge. I am Christopher Hart. And still in the studio with us is Jason Hoyt. And once again, he is heading up the pack, Stop Playing Favorites, opposing Amendment 4. We'll get back to that here in a second. But also now in the studio is John Barros. John, always great to see you.
Thank you, sir. Same here.
You're looking more tan than ever.
Oh, baby.
You're out there baking, I know. All right. Speaking of bacon in the sun, this Solar Amendment 4 is, once again, as we were telling you before the break, this is it's not so much about solar and you know, yeah, it is to get people to use solar energy, but it's more so to give the legislature the ability to play favorites.
Yeah. And nice segue, by the way. Did you plan that? That was great. Getting back into the solar topic here.
Well, you know, that's what we do. But it this is, once again, this is a pig in a poke. This is not what it appears to be. This is simply a power grab by the legislature. Both parties are in on this. That's how you know it's not a good idea, right?
Absolutely.
And the fact that they basically passed it the second to the last day of the session, and they put it on the ballot on the primary ballot,
yeah,
when they know the turnout is not going to be nearly as high. This is the same thing as when they raised the Seminole County property tax. They put it on these obscure ballots so that they can get fewer votes, and therefore their particular interests are empowered more so.
Yeah, when you peel back the onion a little bit, it gets raunchier and raunchier. On the surface, when I travel around the state, and that's what I've decided to do this month, I travel around the state, I do interviews, I speak to different groups, and I'll tell you about some of that feedback in a second, but a lot of people are confused, and they think, hey, it's solar, of course, it's Florida, we want solar. And let me just make this very clear. I am not against solar. I want solar. I want solar to be successful. I want them to be competitive. I want them to be innovative. I want them to invest in better technology. With the demand we have here in Florida, we should all be interested in it. We have ample supply. Every solar company should set up shop in Florida, somewhere in the middle between the equilibrium of supply and demand. We should come up with a great price, and we should have a free market for that energy. That's, if we don't have that now, you have to be asking the question, why? And I think the solar industry has been spending a lot of money on lobbying as opposed to making their products better, more innovative. But again, to me, this amendment and this whole conversation is not about solar. This is about the proper role of government, the proper role of our Constitution. When we amend the Constitution, we should all take pause.
Right.
And say, hey, this is a very, very big deal. We need to slow down a little bit and really dig into the details. A lot of people don't. But the more I've been talking about this and traveling to different groups and organizations, and I was at the Hillsborough Republican Executive Committee last week. And they had another gentleman there who is supposed to be a Republican supporting this amendment. And they had both of us that gave us 5 minutes, and we each talked about it. And I ended my talk on with a slide, a direct quote from the Republican Party platform of 2016.
Right.
And the sentence highlighted says, government should not play favorites among energy producers.
Right.
And I pointed to every single one of them in that crowd. I said, you guys are all Republicans right here. This is your party's platform. You all took an oath to not play favorites among energy producers.
And that's what this is all about. This
is
all
it is.
Indeed, it's all about playing favorites. And look, this is very similar to the Solyndra thing. You remember the Solyndra thing?
Yeah.
Right? We guaranteed hundreds of millions of dollars of loans. This is playing favorites in a particular industry, and it never ends well.
No.
That never ends well.
Can you imagine if they would have subsidized the iPhone or the mobile phone when it first came out? We would never have the innovative solutions that where these companies are producing technology that the consumers demand. We never would have done that. They just would have been subsidized to produce what they've been producing.
Right. When innovation is not driven by competition,
yes,
it is going to end poorly wasted money and time.
Absolutely. And I get the idea. A lot of people, Liberty folks, are saying, well, look, man, it's going to be lower taxes for businesses. Don't we want lower taxes? And we're giving them a chance to compete by lowering taxes. And guys, it's not the place for the Constitution to give our government the power to pick winners and losers and say, hey, if you install a pool, which is going to improve the overall health of your family and the community, we're not going to give you an exemption, but we're going to give these guys an exemption because they do something else that we approve of.
Right.
Guys, that's picking winners and losers. That's
right.
Wrong.
Right. We can't fall into the trap of thinking, well, we can pick winners better than the other side.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And that's kind of what this is all about. So you're going to want to vote no. So your reaction that you're getting is mostly confusion, and it's no wonder. Just try read this thing and see if you can make sense of it. This is what I've said before. If you cannot understand an amendment or a proposal on a ballot, if you cannot read it and understand what it's saying, for heaven's sake, do not vote for it.
Absolutely. And there's a key word. Don't focus on the word solar because we're Florida, we're solar. Focus on the word exemption. Next week, when you vote in the primary and you see on Amendment 4 on the ballot the word exemption, you should say, you know what? We shouldn't be given the legislature the power to exempt certain industries.
Right. Because that way they play favorites, they curry favor, and they get rewarded, and we get screwed.
Yep.
All right. So it's no on Amendment 4.
God bless you guys. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jason Hoyt. And by the way, once again, if you want to find out more, if you want to help Jason out in his efforts, I encourage you to do so. It's not too late. The primary is a week from tomorrow, so the voting is going on now. Talk to your friends. Talk to your neighbors. Encourage them to go to stopplayingfavorites.com. That's all we're asking here is stop playing favorites. And we don't care who's playing favorites. We just want it stopped. StopPlayingFavorites.com. Okay, we're going to take a break and be back with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. And we got a book to give away. That's right. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Money, money, money.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, it comes down to money. When the politicians play favorites, they get the money. And as I said, we get screwed. No on Amendment 4. Yes to the American Adversaries. Thank you for tuning in. 407-774-8255 is the number. John Barrows, how you doing?
Good. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I want us to start, you know, a lot of times we start off when you're in, we're talking about some of the obstacles and things that you come up against, and we sort of finish up with a good story.
Yes.
I want to start with a good story tonight.
Okay.
Since you were here a couple of weeks ago, tell us what, just of your own choosing, tell us something that'll make people feel good tonight.
I will. I was, and this is an amazing thing of how God works. I was at the abortion clinic like I am every day, and there were people coming in, and there was one girl in particular that came that sometimes I can just really see something. I don't really know what it is, but I can see something and key in on that person. And I called out to this girl, and she was sweet, she was beautiful, and she was nice, and everything like that. And
when you say you call out, about how far away are you from these women?
Oh, well, when the first time I called out to her, I was about a foot and a half away from her.
Is that, she walked right by you?
Yeah, and I offered her the stuff that we offer for, like, to go to Choices and and some info on the 180.
Just a reminder, folks, John is standing on the sidewalk, on a square of sidewalk, basically the Barrows Square, and that's where he stands.
Yeah, and I kept, I talked to her and offered her all these things, and then she kept coming in and out. And it was like a lot of times they'll come out, a girl will come out, and they'll even pretend a lot of times, they'll admit to me that that they are pretending that they're on the phone, but they're really just wanting to hear some more, whatever you've got to say. And but then she huddled in there with everybody, and then I began to preach. And as you know, it's about 25 feet from the window, from where I am on there. And about halfway through, she came out. Her name's Mariana. And the beautiful thing about this is that Mariana was a Muslim. I get very, very few Muslims down there, because it's the worst sin in Islam.
It is, yeah.
Is to abort a baby. And I get very few. And in fact, out of the, I think, 8 that I've seen over all these years, 6 of them have chosen life after being there.
Now hold on a second, because you're not preaching from the Quran.
No, sir.
You're preaching from the Bible.
Exactly.
And that's what's reaching these Muslim women, these Muslim girls.
Yes, and it's amazing, because God, like her, I don't know, I get kind of weepy in here when I start thinking of these things, but like her, she came out the front door, and then she walked up to me, and I said, "Can I pray for you, Mariana?" And she said, "Would you please?" And I put my hand on her shoulder to pray for her, and then I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "I'm sorry for touching you." Because I've touched other Muslim girls to pray for them, and in Islam,
that's another no-no.
It's a no-no to touch.
They're not even supposed to shake
only
hands.
Only her husband is supposed to be able to.
They're not even supposed to shake hands with you.
But she began crying, Chris, and she said, "Touch me, please. Please touch me. Please touch me and pray for me." And I just really couldn't hardly take it, but I did. I began to pray for her, and then she began to, the tears really began to flow. And then when we were done, I said, how can we help you? I said, I'm a Christian, you're a Muslim, but God has sent me down here today, and he has touched you, he's opened your eyes, and he's opened your heart where those other ones are not. And I said, but Jesus is the one that has sent me here to tell you this, that if you trust him, if you trust God today, that he will take care of everything you need. He promises to in Matthew 6:33. And then I went through some of the scriptures in the old, because they accept the Old Testament.
Right.
And they also accept Jesus as a prophet.
Correct.
But again, I use New Testament scriptures about reaping what we sow. Of course, that's in the Old Testament as well. But we went through these things, and then she just started sobbing and started to tell me her story. She has 3 kids. She's got one of them has autism, her oldest. And then she has 2 others that are younger. I think one was 6 and one was 4. And then she told me that her husband was not good. And they were actually separated. And he was not good. I can't go into everything.
I understand.
But I could not believe my eyes when I saw God literally touch her. She gave me the biggest hug and thanked me so much for being there. I gave her my card and gave her the info that we do, and offered her, of course, to come to St. Andrews, to my church. And she hasn't gotten a hold of me yet, and I don't know if she will, but she is keeping her baby. I mean, she went to Choices.
She did.
She got her ultrasound.
That's great.
The ladies there confirmed her decision to
carry.
People, God's word touches people. He is not limited by their belief system or their culture. His word goes through. It opens hearts, opens eyes, and brings forth life.
That's proof of it right there.
It was so beautiful. But if anybody's out there driving around, like I imagine Diana,
yeah.
if you all would pray for Mariana. I mean, she's
Mariana.
Really a sweet, sweet girl.
And her little child.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know. And that child is born at some point in that person's life. Perhaps Mariana will tell them what happened.
Yes.
And who knows what that person may do with that information. They may be a huge change agent. You just don't know. Every life matters. Every life counts.
You
and
never
every
know.
Life has the potential to be something great.
Yes. You never know. Like, there was a girl that flew all the way from Bahrain to come and have an abortion at this abortion clinic that was Muslim, and she chose life a few years ago, and that was an amazing story, beyond belief, actually. I don't know if you want me to tell that one, but...
Go ahead.
Okay. There's.
Because this is extraordinary stuff.
Yeah, it was a Muslim girl. It was a hot day like today. I was sitting on this little pony wall they have there that Dr. Collins lets me sit on, and this girl gets out of a taxi. And she didn't look like any girl I see down there. It really caught my eye because she was dressed like a 40s or 50s actress, movie star type thing with the shawl around her head. And the clothes were not anything I see.
Not contemporary.
Had those red bottom high heel kind of things, you know, those $800 shoes
gallons,
or whatever.
Right, and shoes, yeah.
So she shows up. And I just asked her, I said, young lady, can I speak to you just for a minute? And she says, why not? I mean, I don't know how to do her accent, but she says, why not? So she sat on the wall, and I started talking to her, and she was saying how she was here to get an abortion, and it had to be today. And I'm saying, why? And she says, because it's the 40th day. And I had no idea what she was talking about. And then it come to find out we talked over an hour and a half sitting there. And she explained how in Islam, in one sect in Islam, that they believe that a baby becomes a baby on the 40th day after conception, that the angel Gabriel blows a horn and it puts life into that fetus.
Right.
And so that's what, she was part of that sect. But again, I went through scriptures with her. I went through how the book of Ruth, it says God granted conception to Ruth.
Right.
That's a baby, that's a person at conception. And we went through everything. Then I went through the hard things about how God hates the hands that shed innocent blood. I went through Galatians 6 where it tells us, be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatsoever you sow, you're going to reap. And went through those kind of things. And she began to cry. And then she was going, I have to do it. I have to do it. I said, no, you don't. And so I asked her if I could pray for her. And again, I put my hand on her shoulder. I'm just so used to that in America.
Right.
But
right.
I put my hand on her shoulder and prayed for her. And then she began to cry. And she got up and ran in and said, I have to, John. I have to. It's the 40th day. And she goes in and, you know, after an hour and a half of this is very emotional. This is very, very hard. After an hour and a half, she goes in anyway, and I'm deflated.
I guess.
And I'm sitting there and I'm praying. And then a friend of mine, Deanna, drives by and just stops and just says, what's going on? And I told her what had happened. She said, well, let me pray with you. So we're praying. And then about 10 or 15 minutes later, the door opens.
And here she comes.
And out she comes. And she's walking down this little sidewalk. And I said, you're not going to do it. And she said, no, I'm not. But you cannot touch me, John. She goes, but I will do high fives with you. So she stood on this little thing, and we did these high fives.
Oh,
and I couldn't hug her. But
right.
I told her I was going to. Scared her to death. But she then began to tell her story that she was in Bahrain. She's pregnant. They have a lot of debt, but they're professional. She's a doctor. Her husband's a doctor. But in Islam, if you get into debt and you cannot pay your debt, that is it's a lot worse than if you try to do something like that here.
Exactly.
And so she had found an ad for this place. So she told her husband she was going to visit friends over in Indonesia. And, it's the truth. But what she didn't tell him was she was getting on a plane to go to Indonesia and then Indonesia to here. That morning she had landed here. She had taken a taxi to the hotel, had her bags put in there and everything, and then she came to the abortion clinic. And she thought she would knock this out and go back to Indonesia and recover there with her family there in Indonesia. But God stepped in. And I will never forget it. I asked her because I kept the scripture that got her the most was when I said that about Galatians chapter 6, where Paul says, to be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatsoever you sow, you're going to reap. And she said that while she was in there filling out the paperwork, that all of a sudden this heaviness came upon her. And she thought to herself, what if I was to die in this building, in this country? What shame would be upon my family, my husband?
Yeah, right.
And she said that that's what God used
to persuade
her to come out. And I told her, I said, you thought you were coming down here to have an abortion, but God had you come here to hear him tell you to trust him. And I hope that, you know, I started to share stuff about the gospel with her and all that. And I gave her my card, but I don't think I'll ever hear from her. I gave her my card. I was hoping that someday I would get a picture of her baby, like a girl just sent me one just 2 minutes ago of her baby. But
you never know.
You never know.
John just used the word trust. You know, that's really what faith is you're putting your trust in God. Right, you're giving up whatever you power you have, and you are trusting in God. That's what faith is all about. And John, you know, he epitomizes faith in God, and that's why it affects people when he speaks. And not everybody, but enough. Well, it's never enough, but nonetheless, faith is a strong thing in life, and. Tony Dungy knows a lot about faith. He's written a book called Quiet Strength, The Principles, Practices, and Priorities of a Winning Life. It's all about his faith and how it carries him through life. If you'd like a copy of that book, call us right now. We'll take the first caller at 407-774-8255. Quiet Strength was a best-selling book on the New York Times bestseller list. And, of course, he was just inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. If you want that book, call us right now, 407-7-
Hi, this is Roxy Astor from GLOW, one of the Park Avenue Knockouts. When I'm not shopping or getting my nails done, I listen to the American Adversaries on AM 660, The Answer, WORL. These guys are the best when it comes to political professional wrestling. I'd step in the ring any day with these guys, but, of course, I'd win.
All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. Thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations to James. He got tonight's copy of Tony Dungy's book, Quiet Strength, and we'll have another copy to give away tomorrow. All right. We're still here. We're live, and you can give us a call at 407-774-8255. John Barrows is in the studio with me, Christopher Hart, and fascinating stories. I know, as you said, there's a lot of times when you get deflated and frustrated when you think maybe, you know, somebody will come out and they don't. But when the times when they do, it's just, I mean, you must feel an elation.
You know, it's really a weird feeling. It's almost like the rest of the world doesn't even exist. When you're standing there, when they come out and they're in the process of choosing life, and you know that the Holy Spirit is working in their heart, opening their eyes, giving them the faith that they need. Sometimes it's like there's not even anybody else in the world. I don't know how to explain.
And that's really what it is, because you're not standing there making a scientific argument, are you?
No.
You're, no, it's sir. All about faith and God, right?
Yes, sir.
So that's what's in play. That's what's at work.
Yes.
This is not a if you will, a rational debate sort of argument that you're making.
That's correct. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, it tells us to correct those that are in opposition if perhaps God would grant them repentance and open their eyes that they might see the snare of the devil, having been taken by him to do his will. I can't reason somebody out of an abortion. That's why I tell you I've seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of girls choose life over the years, but I would never take credit for one of them. I cannot reason anybody into this because they come there and their minds are set, they're blind, they're hardened, but it takes God.
You had said that this particular abortion center had been started opening on Sundays.
Yes.
They continue to do that?
No. Last Sunday, they were not open, and they're really in trouble. I mean, they really are. That
you mean financially?
Well, I think...
Or legally?
Legally.
Or both?
Legally.
Okay.
Probably both. But from what I understand, the state of Florida has put in the paperwork to pull their license. And James Pendergraft, the owner, had was going to put up a defense against this by saying that he didn't own the place,
right,
and that he about his drug charges that they are now indicting him on
in South Carolina.
And I think personally, I don't know, it's going to probably come out soon, but he stopped his defense, so there's not going to be a hearing then. So what I'm thinking is, and I'm hoping, is that as part of the maybe the plea defense, maybe he doesn't want to go to prison and for the charges in South Carolina, that maybe he's just going to let it all go.
I see. As part of his legal woes there, he may relinquish the clinic here.
That's if that's and you what's say, going on. But he is – they are not having a hearing on September 15th now.
And September 15th is when the state's going to decide whether or not to pull their license?
Well, the state has put in the paperwork to do it. Now, I don't know what happens if he's not going to do a defense.
I would presume that
I'm not an attorney.
We could only make an assumption at this point, but you would presume that they would just follow through with what they're pursuing. If he doesn't resist, then it would just speed up the process.
I would think so.
He has how many clinics still in Florida?
He's got four.
Still four.
Got one in Tampa, one in Fort Lauderdale, and two here in Orlando.
And if he owns 10% or more, that makes him an owner, doesn't it?
Yes.
In the eyes of the state.
Yes.
He doesn't have to be a majority owner or own at all. Just 10% ownership or more.
Correct. And it's, you know, they've tried to do, to hide things, put people's names in for things over the years that people don't even exist. So
right, yeah, terms of entities so he can get around the requirements. Is he still in South Carolina? Does anybody know where he's at?
I have no idea, no.
Okay, and, but of course he's not the only operator here in town, right? You got Planned Parenthood.
Yes, who is, I got to tell you this, I don't know what's going on with them, but they're hardly open anymore.
Really?
Yeah, they're hardly doing any abortion. I've had girls that...
You're talking about the one over there on Tampa?
On Tampa Avenue. Yeah. And I know ladies that serve over there on the sidewalk over there, and they'll come over and say, yeah, they're not even seeing people today, or they'll say that they're referring them to the one in Kissimmee or whatever, but they're not really...
Huh. That's interesting. You know, there was a court just, I believe it was late last week, that struck down the new legislation that was passed just this past session to pull funding from Planned Parenthood. So, in other words, he made sure that the funding would continue by striking putting a hold on this law. So perhaps just by their own, I don't know, sort of, you know, bad business or whatever. Perhaps they're, we'll just have to keep an eye on that to see if that trend continues. That's obviously a good sign, right?
Right. Absolutely.
All right. Well,
there's some other good news I want to tell you.
All right.
And next week, I mean, or in 2 weeks, I'm going to bring Vicky with me. She said that from Choices.
Yes.
She's going to – they just bought a 6,000-square-foot
– You were telling us a little bit about this last time. Yeah,
and they closed on it. It's all done. They're going to have a an open house on Tuesday, September 20th from 5 to 7.
Cool.
If anybody would like to go there, call Choices.
Where's it going to be? Where's the new place?
It's on let me see.
You said it was like between where your abortion center is and the Planned Parenthood center.
Kind of, yeah. It's, well, I don't have the address for it here.
But
in a couple of weeks, we can sure get that.
Well, that's that
5,880 square feet.
Which is much larger than the facility that they're in right now.
Yeah, and it's like between, it's 1 mile from Planned Parenthood, 2 miles from the Epoch Clinic, and 3 miles from the one that I'm at. So it's very centrally located.
That's some strategic thinking there.
It is.
Yeah, to make it easy for each one of these locations to get people to that Choices place. And with more space, they'll be able to service more clients.
Yeah, they're doing other things too, like the Heart of the City group is going to be in there doing sex trafficking help to try and rescue
as a
people that are part of that. So all this stuff's intertwined.
And Central Florida is the largest sex trafficking area in the state and the third largest in the country. So there is obviously a huge need for that right here in Central Florida. So it'll be great that they'll be able to help out there too.
Yeah.
We have James on the line. James, thank you for calling tonight. Are you the James who won the book?
Same one.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think you're going to enjoy it.
I hope so. I wanted to call in and share with John a very brief thing that I saw in Time magazine.
And please do.
So far this year, 3,000 immigrants have drowned trying to cross the Mediterranean. And when I read about that, I thought of John, because 3,000 people is about the number of abortions that are done daily in the United States. So every day, 3,000 lives are taken away from this republic, from this country, whatever you want to say, from the families in this country. And I think that the work that John is doing is very important. And whatever number of that 3,000 a day he can pull back is a tribute to him, and it's a tribute to his work and to his faith, his religion, and his God. So I just want to thank him for that. I know I've called in once before and mentioned the numbers, but I want everybody to understand that it, in America, in the United States of America, it's 3,000 babies a day that are killed by abortion. So thank you, John.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling and making those comments and reminding folks of those numbers. And, you know, that number is staggering. And if you look at the totals over the years since Roe v. Wade, you're talking 50 million plus. And those are people who could be, you know, entrepreneurs. They could be writers. They could be a whole lot of things that we now basically have to import people into our country because we are not reproducing our own citizens because we're aborting so many of them. It's not like we're not making the babies. It's just we're not having the babies in the numbers that would support a growing society. And so we tolerate illegal immigration. We tolerate people who come here legally and then stay there, because we're just not replenishing our numbers. And John, when John saves lives, he talked about the 3,000. When you save, when a woman comes out, you have not only saved that child's life, as you know, well, God has not only saved that child's life through you, but the mother's as well.
Correct. And I mean, when a girl chooses life, She's choosing life for multiple generations.
Right.
For not just her baby, but
the offspring of
her
that
grandchildren,
baby. Yeah.
Her great-grandchildren.
Yep.
And it all goes up. You know, I keep watching, I think it's Schindler's List, where at the end you see all those people that were children of peoples from Schindler's List.
Right.
Survivors and all that. And it's, I think that's the one. I'm not sure, but it's kind of amazing. I mean,
it's that sort of ripple effect.
Correct.
That when you save the one, you are saving many.
Yes, it's not just one.
Exactly.
You know, we had, in fact, it was really clear yesterday, a young lady that chose life a week ago came and actually worshiped
at
with
the
me at St. Andrews. And she's having triplets.
Oh, so my Lord. Did she know before she went to get the sonogram?
No.
She did not know?
No.
Wow. That is amazing. All right. I tell you what. Let's take JJ's phone call. Nick, you just go ahead and give us a couple more minutes here, if you would, please. JJ, thank you for calling tonight. We appreciate you being there.
Hello, guys. Hi, John. I was calling you Joe. John, I really appreciate the work you're doing. You know, I volunteer at Choices, and I got that Muslim girl you're talking about and counseled with her.
Isn't she amazing?
Yeah. You know, I tried to explain about Jesus. You know, I said, we have a lot in common, you know, but Jesus, you know, and she said, well, I don't believe God has a son. And I said, that's okay. But she changed her mind. At least she said, oh, I have three kids. She has the one with the autism, the oldest one. She goes, well, I have three. What's one more? And, you know, she just, you know, she talked about, you know, you talking to her. And so, you know, she had a change of heart. I mean, you know, one step at a time. Anyway, it's just some of the people that come in, they're abortion-minded. We try to give them the option of, if they don't want a parent, to, there's no shame in giving a baby up for adoption. There's plenty of people and help to get, you know, for their medical bills and everything. And they'll say, oh, I could never let someone else raise my baby, but they could consider aborting it. And isn't it amazing that how we can fool ourselves, or, you know, the scales that people can have on their eyes, that they can have an abortion, but they feel their pride would keep them. I could never let someone else raise my child, you know, so I lose my mind. But I so appreciate the work you do. You're a spiritual giant, and, you know, God bless you for your example that you're setting. Well, you just saved triplets, see? A threefer.
That's right.
Well, you guys are amazing over there, I'll tell you. It's awesome to be able to work as a team like that.
Yours is the hardest part, because you've got to make that initial.
He's in the trenches, as they say.
Yeah, the hardness of heart you got to get past, you know. But it's awesome. And, you know, the irony of one of the girls I work with, volunteer with, she said one girl came in there with a guy and said that she does not identify as a woman. She cannot have this baby because she does not identify as a woman.
Oh,
and I said, well, apparently you did at some point. and I said, now this is my friend that had her. And I said, gosh, I wish we could just say to her, you know, she's a real evangelist, and she's trying to, you know, make them see the light. But
right.
I said, you know, I just wish I could have said, can you just be, you know, just identify as a woman one more time?
One more time. Yeah. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's so much gender confusion. And the irony of that is all this gender confusion, and what do you feel like today, and options, and every people that are voting for Hillary, one of the things, like on Waters World, when they interview these young kids, why are you voting? They're like, well, you know, the first woman president.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, what difference does that make? I mean, why is her gender so important?
Yep. It shouldn't be.
Know?
Yep.
I know. It's kind of ironic.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed.
Anyway, thanks.
All right. Okay. Thank you. By the way, heard John Gallagher. You sounded great. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we got one more segment of the show to go. And John Barros, once again, who will stand? He stands. Will you stand with him? Whowillstand.net. Whowillstand.net. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. Don't forget, Larry Elder comes up at 7 o'clock. I'm sure he's going to have a lot to talk about things going on. You know, we were just talking with JJ, and she mentioned that interesting situation with the transgendered person. You know, the Obama administration over the summer had issued a quote-unquote suggestion for school districts around the country to start allowing boys and girls to use whichever bathroom or locker room that they identified with, so to speak. And there was some outrage, and fortunately a judge has put an injunction on that, so schools do not have to jeopardize their federal funding by refusing to comply with that quote-unquote suggestion. And so, at least for now, school districts around the country have a reprieve and do not have to worry about girls, or I should say probably more often than not, boys using the girls' restroom rather than the other way around. I can see that, of course, creating a lot of problems. What was discouraging to me, though, is that Orange County was, they were just ready and willing to jump right in. Oh, yeah, we'll do that. No problem whatsoever. Seminole County was a little more reluctant. But anyway, the judge did put that injunction in place today. John, when you're down there and on days like today, I mean, it's brutal out there. How do you do it? I mean, I work outside, but I can kind of usually find some shaded area to work in or something, right?
Well, I do have an umbrella that I'm able to have.
But you're standing on concrete, man. I mean, that stuff absorbs heat.
I know. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say it doesn't affect me. But you know, seeing what God does is so incredible that
it just recharges your batteries, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't. Plus, you know what? Frankly, you know I love the Colonel.
Yeah, Colonel McKnight. Yeah.
Colonel McKnight. I met him that night. I've never forgotten him. I mean, I think of him all the time. And I'm thinking of our soldiers that are over in the Middle East. I think of his Black Hawk Down band of brave men. I think of I watch World War II documentaries all the time. Those guys, they did it in packs. They did it with nothing. I mean, they did it, and if they can do it, what do I have to complain about? These guys are tromping around in the Middle East with 80-pound packs on their backs, running around with people shooting at them. What do I have to complain about, honestly?
Well, that does kind of put it in perspective. But nonetheless, it does say something about your character that rain, shine, you know, you're like the old postman thing, you know, rain or shine, you know, John delivers, and God delivers as well. And so it's, but nonetheless, folks, he likes his coffee from Dunkin' Donuts with cream only, right?
That's right.
And you can drop it by Lucerne Terrace.
Yes.
Monday through Friday. And I guess, are you out there on Sundays when you after church? Do you ever go by there on Sundays?
Well, I go there Sunday morning and I pick up people that, like, say they've chosen life and they don't have a ride. People from the downtown area, I'll meet them either there or at the Center for Drug Free Living, the Aspire thing right down the street.
Yeah.
And take them to church.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I didn't know you had an office in the jail. Which jail is that?
33rd Street.
Yeah. So they give you office space down there?
Well, yeah. I'm the chaplain for the Genesis division
program
of the jail. Dorms.
And, yeah. I've read about that.
And so that's, I have an office in there.
So you you're preaching in a couple of places where people need it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the men in the jail, a lot of the times it's the first time they've ever stopped to take stock in their life, even.
And that's why they're there.
Yeah, and so there's no greater opportunity. And you know, I go into like when I go over there after being at the abortion clinic. You know, there's trustees that are in there, and they'll say, "Hey, chap, how'd it go? We've been praying for you. Anybody choose life today?"
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like you would imagine. people always say, how do you work in a dark place like that? I go, are you kidding me? That is like the light of my life. These guys are awesome.
I hear you.
I mean, there's, you know, I should have been probably put away forever.
I was going to say.
In my life.
You're taking me back, John.
No, I know. You know, honestly, those guys ain't got nothing on me. God delivered me from some things, and, you know, I love those guys. I don't know how to explain it.
I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about, my friend. John Barros, whowillstand.net is his website, whowillstand.net, and he doesn't get paid to do this, folks. So if there's any way you can help out, please do so. He doesn't make a point of going around soliciting donations, but if you can in any way help John out, please do so. As you can see, as you heard, he's helping all kinds of people out and people who need help and who need that message that he delivers, God's message of salvation and faith and trust. And, you know, as he said, you know, when he puts things in perspective, we can all, you know, help out in our own way. And that's what he does. Whowillstand.net. Please help John Barros, even if it's to tote him a cup of coffee by there one morning or maybe something cold to drink on one afternoon and just stand there with him and pray. Believe me, that helps. Whowillstand.net. Look forward to seeing you back. You and Vicky, it'll be in 2 weeks, huh?
Yes, sir.
All right, look forward to that.
Yep.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for tonight's show. Don't forget, Larry Elder is up next, and he's going to be let's just say he's going to be putting together a great show like he always does. And don't forget, please visit us at our website, AmericanAdversaries.com. Tomorrow night, we're going to have Lloyd Marcus join us and tell us about a Blue Lives event that he has coming up. So please join us then. Night, everybody.
Total Roof Services Studio, FM 105.5, AM 660. The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando.